From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
On the program this week, we'll be joined by the distinguished former U.S. Congressman Andy Levin, who will be sharing with us his continued work in green energy, especially electric school buses. We'll also chat with Dr. Sharon Irvine, superintendent of Southgate Schools, about the number of wonderful opportunities they provide students when school is not in session. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on School Talks is Mr. Andy Levin, former United States Congressman. And Mr. Levin recently wrapped up a two-year stint as a distinguished senior fellow at the Center for American Progress in Washington. He is the founder and chief strategist at Lean and Green Michigan, a company that helps businesses and nonprofits finance clean energy makeovers of their buildings. He's represented Macomb and Oakland counties in Congress for 4 years and has held other senior positions in our state and federal governments. And recently, he focuses on developing and implementing forward-thinking policies to help American workers and families. It is a pleasure to have you on the program, Mr. Levin.
Good to see you, Dr. Livernoy. You're looking great.
Thank you.
See it on the radio, but it's really good to see you again.
Yes, thank you very much. So let's start with this. While you were in Congress, you served as the vice chair of the Education and Labor Committee, and you were active in a bunch of policies affecting K-12 education as well as pre-K and higher ed. And you helped pass the Inflation Reduction Act and introduced other legislation, which, for example, the Build Green Act,
right,
to help things. Tell us a bit about that act and, most importantly, where it stands today.
Yeah, well, we introduced a lot of legislation. I personally, you know, I'm a Detroit kid, so I introduced the EV Freedom Act. I introduced the Build Green Act, which is about electrification of transportation broadly. So it's interesting, we'll be talking about school buses, but this was about every aspect, like city fleets or county or school fleets of all kinds, or mass transit, high-speed rail, all that. None of that is moving forward in today's Congress. Really, not much legislation of any kind is moving forward. The current administration in Washington is mostly kind of running things by executive order. And, you know, I hope they get around to doing some legislating, because that's, you know, very important for democracy, is the House and Senate duking it out with each other about, you know, passing some real new legislation to move the ball forward for the American people. So I hope they get around to that. But right now, those bills are not moving.
You know, so for our School Talks listeners, I want to drill down a bit on the work you're doing to help school districts in Michigan attempt to install and deploy electric school buses. And first of all, let's start with the bottom line, money, right?
Okay.
In my time as superintendent in Warren County Schools, we had a fleet of 120 buses, lots of underground fuel tanks, diesel, and so on. And the thought of shifting that to something different seems to raise the question of how would you do this, and what are some of the short and long-term costs that a school district could face as they move in that direction?
Yeah, great question. So basically, the simple answer is, short-term, it's more expensive because electric buses cost more, but long-term, it's cheaper because they're much, much less expensive to operate. Electricity is way cheaper than fuel. They have so many fewer parts. Their maintenance is a lot less. And they're basically much more problem-free. And they even can last significantly longer than most school districts. Keep a diesel bus in service for 8-10 years. And you can go 10-15 years with an electric bus. So mm-hmm. There's a lot of advantages to it long-term, financially speaking.
You know, I offer a comparable example, and that's artificial turf as opposed to natural
turf.
The maintenance costs of artificial turf is substantially less
I see, but it costs more to put it in.
Exactly.
I see. Yep. Interesting.
So, you know, in 10, 12 years when the carpet wears out, you put a new piece of carpet down. Certainly not in the green thinking space, but from a comparable maintenance cost, it's a very similar proposition. So you mentioned, you know, the federal government right now is really not interested in moving this forward. And despite that, are there any other incentives or opportunities for schools to continue to move forward on an electrified school bus?
Well, there are opportunities, especially here in Michigan. I mean, folks who run school districts and you know, principals and whatnot, as well as superintendents, I'm not sure how many of them are aware of this, but in fiscal year 2024, so in about June of 23, the state legislature appropriated $125 million specifically to help school districts across the state adopt electric school buses. And we're talking 70 to 90% incentives on the upfront costs of adopting school buses, specifically the purchase of the bus, the purchase of the charging infrastructure, even the installation of the charging infrastructure. And friends, the state is going to give you 70 to 90% of the cost for up to 10 school buses. So this is a huge incentive. The current round of funding from the Michigan Department of Education, you know, they have like a request for proposals out. It expires May 2nd, but they keep doing it, you know, and Dr. Livernois, of the $125 million, $80 million of it is still available. So this is a huge opportunity for school districts, whether you're in the UP or upper lower peninsula or in the Detroit area, it doesn't matter. It's a big opportunity, and nobody's going to turn their whole fleet electric, right? But you still, if you got a wrestling tournament in Traverse City, you're probably not taking an electric school bus. But in terms of reliability, right, to get that morning and afternoon run in, It's a good opportunity to get started with it. And this is the future, so might as well.
Interesting. We're currently chatting with former U.S. Congressman Andy Levin about electric school buses and lots of green things. So let me ask you, with the finances available, talk a bit about how electric school buses, it might seem obvious, but how are they healthier for kids?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And a lot of people don't get beyond the basic dollars and cents, but it's really worth it to think about. Diesel fumes are a big problem. They're a big problem for all of us. They're a big problem for kids with asthma or staff with asthma, especially. Any of us can, as parents or even remembering from our childhood, you know, you could picture that big lineup of buses waiting to pick kids up after school or even at the bus stop where you get on the bus. An electric school bus is completely clean. It has no fumes whatsoever. So it's a lot healthier in that way. It's also much quieter. So the stress of a school bus ride or of what might happen in the back of the school bus where nobody can hear because it's so loud and you're, you know, worried about somebody beating you up or, you know, all the kind of things, that is dramatically reduced. And it really is a much healthier option.
You know, from a health perspective, we've taken the opportunity in schools for years to teach children about nutrition based on what we serve them. And I think about a student who's able to ride an electric school bus to and from school. There's an educational opportunity in that, separate from just getting to school on a quiet bus. What are your thoughts on that?
Wow, that is such a good point. And there are multiple educational benefits. The first one might be a little surprising. The bus ride is so quiet that you can read to children on the bus, or you could talk to them. You can actually do educational content on the bus, especially if you're thinking of younger, right, the early elementary grades. So that's one thing. But then quite beyond that, think of the need. There are simply not enough mechanics who know how to take care of electric vehicles of all kinds, right? Think about the technology involved in charging infrastructure. We are moving towards batteries. Obviously, the phone in your pocket has a battery. Everything has batteries these days. But, you know, our utilities are installing what are called BESS systems, battery energy storage systems, BESS. So that, you know, when you have wind power, solar power, they're intermittent, right? The sun isn't always shining, the wind isn't always blowing. So they're putting in these utility scale battery facilities to store power like it will blow, the wind blows a lot, then you store the power, you use it other times. So all these are huge needs in the economy that we need people trained to work on.
Sure.
And so any school system that has vocational education, getting kids out there to that bus depot that now is a big charging infrastructure, letting students begin to see how you work on the buses, take care of the buses, take care of the charging infrastructure. It's all big educational opportunities for kids when they think about high-paying careers that don't necessarily involve 4 years of college.
You know, in many respects, it seems limitless just given the number of tangents you can draw from an electric school bus. I need to take a break, hear from our sponsors. When I come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about any interactions you've had with school districts to date who've been trying to move in this direction. So we'll be back right after this. This is 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
All right, we're back here with former U.S. Congressman Andy Levin talking about electric school buses and the many opportunities and issues provided in pursuing such an option in Michigan. So before the break, Mr. Levin, we were talking about some of the indirect academic benefits for kids who might ride an electric school bus to and from school. And are you currently involved or aware of some districts locally or across the state who have moved in this direction? And if so, what's the feedback you're getting?
Yes. Well, I mean, one of the reasons I got involved with this is that I think if districts try just kind of on their own and they get like one or two buses and they don't really have the capacity to deal with it, it cannot be a super positive experience. And I think there are a number of districts that have had experiences like that. But increasingly, they are doing it in a kind of a smarter way and a more organized way. Dearborn just recently had a big ribbon cutting where I think they added 18 buses. I had to be in D.C. that day. I was so sorry to miss it. My wife was there. A lot of my friends were there. A lot of superintendents were there. And it was just an incredible event. They have a whole new area of their bus depot set up for charging. They've got these 18 new buses. People got a chance to ride on them. And it's really a super positive launch for Dearborn. They're working with Highland Electric Fleets, which helps. They basically take care of everything for a school district so that they can, you know, it can work financially as well as the technology. You know, Ypsilanti, Three Rivers, some other school districts that kind of were really brave early adopters that started on their own, they're now looking, I think, for ways to ramp it up more. If you think about it in a kind of a business-like way that's not just a little one-off experiment, it kind of really makes sense, doesn't it? Anything, you like, if I have some hobby and I go try to do something just as a, you know, I don't know much about it. And look, if you were a superintendent for years, right? Your people, who your transportation manager and the people who work in the bus, they know how to take care of diesel buses, right? They know about those systems. Now you're introducing something brand new. It really makes sense to do it in kind of a measured, careful, systematic way. And that's what we're increasingly seeing. And that's why I'm so optimistic for the future, because more and more districts are, you know, with the help of these state incentives, really, saying, look, let us, you know, we have 60 buses, we have 80 buses, whatever their situation. Let's not do one or two. Let's do, you know, 10 or something, still a way minority of our fleet, but enough of a number so we can set something up that allows us to grow healthily in the future and do it in a way where we're really in great shape infrastructure-wise mm-hmm. to take care of the first round and then grow it later.
You know, what's really smart about that is when you take baby steps, you have the opportunity to perfect a much smaller system before you expand on it. And when I think about some of America's greatest achievements, whether it's space travel or, I mean, it was always done in baby steps.
Right.
Because you can't go from zero to 100, no pun intended, in a school bus.
But
right. You really can't, like a district like Warren, where I was superintendent, the thought that you're just going to turn this whole fleet over is, it doesn't make any sense. But to create a smaller opportunity to begin that process, whether it's feasible or not, at least you're positioning yourself to be successful at it.
And really proof test it, right?
Exactly.
I mean, let your drivers drive them, right? Let your mechanics, everyone involved in your transportation system. And what's going to happen is they'll be like, wow, this is great. I mean, at this Dearborn launch, this one bus driver was the... like a poster child for selling. He was just a local, a longtime bus driver in the Dearborn Public Schools. But he was so happy and relieved to be driving this electric school bus. And you can imagine if you're a superintendent and when your staff starts to have a really positive experience, you're like, okay, fine, yeah. Let's go.
And move them to the front of the line.
Yeah.
On a side note, are you aware of any issues with buses and cold weather performance?
Absolutely. And this is another reason why it makes sense to do this systematically. So all the major school, you asked earlier, like, well, is this all going to turn around because of the federal government's posture or something? And the answer is certainly not. Every major school bus company now sells and makes electric school buses, right? And so they, whatever company it is, they say, well, these have a range of like 125 miles or something. The way Highland Fleet's done it, does it, and the way I personally think about it is, look, don't be, I drive a Chevy Bolt, right? It says it has a range of 259 miles. Guess what? That means on July 4th. It doesn't mean on February 1st, right? Or December 15th. You got to factor all that in and be super conservative about it. So the way to set it up is make sure that a bus can do the morning run and the afternoon run with plenty of room to spare, even in the very cold weather. And then you basically have no... Then when the bus is only achieving, 65, 85, whatever percent of its, optimal range in really warm, nice weather, this isn't San Diego, it's Detroit, mm-hmm. right? It's Grand Rapids, wherever in this state, then you still are not going to have a problem. So it really is important to take weather into account in thinking about
especially
this.
Especially in Michigan.
In Michigan, yeah.
And we're currently chatting with former U.S. Congressman Andy Levin about electric school buses and the journey toward electrifying our state. Mr. Levin, let me follow up. You mentioned earlier that the state had made available $125 million to support clean bus initiatives and so on. And when I think about you mentioned how much of that's been taking advantage of, it really comes back to an unfortunate reality in our culture, which is sort of that psychology of partisanship. Depending
yes.
on what side of the, the line you're on, and unfortunately, to install an electric school bus fleet is going to have successes and failures like any great achievement in our history. And I think about how important it is to recognize that someone who might want to be a naysayer needs to recognize the longer term sustainability aspect of it in terms of the benefit for kids, the environment, and so on, and not get sort of hung up in the sort of typical politics of the day, so to speak. What are your thoughts on that?
You are so right. It makes me think of my other venture that you mentioned at the top, Lean and Green Michigan, which is a statewide market I created to help businesses and nonprofits do clean energy makeovers of their buildings. That some might do it because they want to be quote unquote green. Most do it just because they want to save money, right? And the point of this is, the way I set it up, it's just a pure pro-business play. It's nothing about conservative, liberal, any of that. And, we have 61 governments, local governments, covering 81% of Michigan in our market. And it includes the most conservative counties and the most liberal counties. And we just keep politics out of it. And so similarly, I think with electric school buses, if you just view it scientifically and factually, this is a great way for people to go. Long term, a district's going to save money. The kids are going to be healthier. There's all these educational opportunities. So it's the wave of the future, and politics really should have nothing to do with it.
And, one final thought, if I may. One of the most powerful aspects of what you're talking about is every fall when school starts, all the buses get on the road. And for all the people who do not have children in school, it's a reminder to them that, hey, school's starting, right? Watch kids on bikes and crossing and so on. And when I think about the opportunity for electric school buses to become visible on the road, it's going to really be an opportunity to be a marketing tool in and of itself. It's going to create conversation, you know, as you, you know, a terrible example right now is the situation that goes on for people who own Teslas, right? Mm-hmm. They've become this target. But, but the reality is, if you start seeing electric school buses on the road, it is in and of itself a marketing tool. And if it's done correctly, it seems like it has some serious viability.
No, so. You're right. I mean, if we can do it with school buses, we can do it with, you know, city fleets, with obviously postal vehicles, and certainly with personal vehicles.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, you know, just being Michiganders, the proof is in the pudding, right? We think we know what VR vehicles are like. We want to test drive them. When you get in, even a like a little you know, not a sports car kind of electric vehicle, but my like old boring Chevy Bolt. When you get in there and you hit the accelerator, you're like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can line up at the stoplight with a sports car and, you know, do battle with them in just a boring old electric car. So I do think that school buses being out there is, you know, a big signal to everybody that we can do this. Let's drop the politics and just get our kind of broad-shouldered, you know, American can-do spirit out there. We need to lead into the technology of the future if we want to continue to, you know, play that role our country always has. So let's go. I think it's a great opportunity.
Andy Levin, former U.S. Congressman and a great leader of all things green. I appreciate your time today on School Talks. You've certainly given our listeners something to think about with regard to the future and electric school buses. I appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Dr. Livernois. It's great to see you again.
Thanks. After a word from our sponsors, we're headed to Southgate Schools, home of the Titans, to chat with Dr. Sharon Irvine. Stay right there. This is 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernois.
Joining us now on the program is Dr. Sharon Irvine, the superintendent for Southgate Community Schools. Welcome to the program, Sharon.
Thank you, Dr. Livernois. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So as we head towards summer break, I've done a little reading and learned about some of the incredible opportunities you're providing students in Southgate schools, not only in the forthcoming summer, but lots of opportunities when school is not in session. And many of our School Talks listeners can certainly appreciate that when schools are closed, it is a different kind of responsibility for parents having to take care of their children. And with that, let's start with this. Dr. Irvine, what types of enrichment or athletic type camps does Southgate offer during the school breaks?
Yes, thanks. We started a while back thinking about how our students need some additional opportunities. And we had some grant money that came in. We thought that some of the fundamental differences that students experience over Michigan is some kids have a lot of access to high-quality programming during the summer and breaks, and some may not. So when we were looking at how to best spend some of the grant money that we had received, we targeted these times when kids are out of school to provide some engaging opportunities for them. So we started on a camp system, and the camp system runs about 5 weeks during the summer, and it also runs over our midwinter break, and it also runs over our spring break. We know that those times sometimes are used already by schools for remedial support, but in our case, we thought, how do we make this fun? How do we make opportunity for kids so inviting that they jump out of bed every day and say, I want to get to school. There's something fun going on. I can't miss it.
And, you know, you mentioned the opportunity during the breaks. It's fair to say that depending on the socioeconomic status of the families in question, some of them have better opportunities when they're out of school, whether it's vacationing, traveling. They may just have more resources than other families. And for many of the families who don't have that level of resource, I certainly can see how these kinds of break opportunities are really beneficial to help the continuity of their learning. So can you describe for us the structure and sort of daily schedule of the upcoming summer camp programs?
Sure. This is our second year doing the full comprehensive program. Last year, we offered it as a half-day program. So we offered programs such as chess camp. We offered athletic camps. We offered ocean life camp, superhero camp, gaming camp, all kinds of opportunities for kids to experience a little bit different of a school day than they would have normally. But this year, our team really buckled down and found a funding source that allows our camps to this time run 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. So that provides a big relief for families who generally have to find latchkey and support services that way. In that plan, we have 5 weeks of it. So they come in, they have a specialty camp that are run by certified teachers. We have a lunchtime. They come back, and in the afternoon, we learned from last year, we mix it up a little bit so that they can try two different activities, for instance, that day. So we found that kids that were playing chess all day kind of wanted to play checkers, you know, later on. Or they wanted to play, they wanted to go see what was happening in robotics camp or in rock band camp or in musical theater camp. And so this year, we're giving them the opportunity to mix up a little bit what they're experiencing during that week.
You know, just the list of things you've mentioned, what a great set of opportunities for kids, just given the number of interests they may have. I want to just drill down on one thing you mentioned. You mentioned they you serve them lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand it's part of the statewide meetup and eat-up program.
Mm-hmm.
Could you share a little bit what that is and how it supports your district?
Yes, we do receive federal funding for lunch programming or lunch meals for kids, and it is free of charge for all of our kids during the school year. And during the summer, that outreach expands to our community, to our families, as well as our students.
And that is across the entire state, because I remember back when I was a superintendent, we had many of our schools as a site where students, regardless of whether they went to school in the district, could come up to that site and get a nutritious meal during the summer months. So with regard to the camp opportunities, are there any available for students, and are there, when I say available, I mean with regard to the eligibility requirements for them to come into these camps?
Nope. They are completely open to really first come, first serve. So on April 14th, we opened our registration, and within an hour, we had 150 students registered, and within 4 hours, we had 300 students registered. Because spaces are generally limited to the school, what is available at that time in our staffing. So it's been a very popular experience. There is no requirement. We do, though, keep it within the range of elementary and middle school. So this year, part of the grant funding is a very heavily integrated math and reading component to it. So even though they're going to be at rock band camp, they're going to be at rock band camp with a little bit of math overlay, a little bit of reading overlay. They won't know it, but they will come away with stronger skill sets because of that.
Mm-hmm. And we're currently with Dr. Sharon Irvine, superintendent of Southgate Community Schools. I want to ask you, the grants are funded in part by United Way?
This round is, yes.
This round is.
Yes.
So United Way puts up the funding to provide the children this opportunity. And because I know many of our School Talks listeners, at times you may see a commercial on television about United Way, and in passing, you might not understand what some of the very specific supports they provide, and this is certainly an example of one. So as far as the summer camp goes, are there age groups or grade levels that are structured for these camp programs? How does that work?
Yeah, our camps are divided K-2, 3-5, and 6-8.
All right.
So we do a traditional summer school option for high school students, and we do also do a more traditional summer school option that accompanies these programs. So there is a wide range for parents to register their kids for. And in some cases, we are especially inviting students that we feel really need some extra support over the summer. One of the key, though, pieces has been how helpful it has been during spring breaks. So this is a very unusual thing for schools to wrap services around parents during some of those major mid-year breaks. And that has taken on a whole new opportunity for extended year. So we want to get creative about the programs we offer kids over an extended year. One way is to extend the school year. Another way is to do it without people really realizing we've done it, mm-hmm. which is providing all these wraparound services that really continue all the way around the year.
This is some good stuff. I'd like to take a short break, hear a word from our sponsors, and when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the activities and the curriculum that goes into the opportunities for these students. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
We're back here on School Talks. We're joined by Dr. Sharon Irvine, the Superintendent for Southgate Community Schools, talking about the wonderful opportunities they provide students when school is not in session, whether it's a summer break or a winter break or what have you. And Dr. Irvine, I'd like to talk a little bit more about how your summer camp activities and are designed thematically and what that means for students. And the most important thing, I think, when you think about camp, given kids are still having to come to school, is how does Southgate Schools ensure that the camp activities are engaging and inclusive for all the students?
Well, we have a particularly talented community ed director, Beth Hensmeen. She was a English language arts teacher, so when it comes time for creating these camps, she comes up with some really remarkable themes. I mean, for instance, Superhero Training Academy. I mean, what second grader doesn't want to go to Superhero Training Academy? And you think about all the ways that we can work in some of those academic topics in preparing to be a superhero. Superheroes need to know math. Superheroes need to have expert reading skills. They have lots of opportunities for great relationships that they build. It's just a great opening for all of everything that might come from that. Our district goal is to have high quality tier one instruction, which means that engaging classroom instruction is one of our priorities, and we really pull that into those camp experiences as well.
And with regard to students with special needs, are there extra levels of support that go into students who might be in that program? Tell us a bit about the type of staff who support them.
Yeah, we really bring that student all the support that is available to them in the school year that travels with them. So if they have a para support or an IEP, those accommodations are also made at camp. Because all of our staffing are certified teachers or they are paraprofessionals and they work in our school environment as it is. We also have high school students who come in and volunteer. We have college students who come in who are preparing for a career in teaching. This is a great opportunity for them to try that out. And so everything that we've done in those environments are intended to replicate that classroom environment that they experience during the year.
So I imagine some of the certified teachers you're using are Southgate Schools teachers, mm-hmm. but are you using others to supplement depending on the program, or is this sort of all an in-house opportunity?
Well, we open it first to our staff, mm-hmm. and we have found lots of takers. Lots of teachers appreciate the opportunity to have a more relaxed format to instruction and to really carve out a fun thematic space to do that in. And we've had really a high interest from our staff and really haven't had to go outside of our current mm-hmm. system.
You know, that speaks volumes to the dedication of your staff, because I remember way back when I was a teacher, I sometimes looked forward to the breaks as much as the students, and to have your staff come forward willingly work on what would be their equivalent break speaks volumes in their commitment to students and so on. So as we work with families in the district, I'm curious, how do you communicate with parents about camp and schedules? And more importantly, do the students eventually produce something that they can share with their parents as sort of an outcome of the time they spent there?
Well, we have a pretty robust communication system when it comes to promoting the opportunities that are available for students. So information's pumped out pretty often through social media, through our digital information systems, and through newsletters for elementary school. So all of that gets out pretty regularly. The themes themselves really lend themselves to having something that they take with them. So on gardening camp, you know, they got their own little seedlings that they take home. Superhero camp, they have a superhero that they have profile they've created that goes home with them. And I'll tell you, what has been amazing is as we are promoting the camp experience through Facebook, we'll have grandparents send a little note or post a little note saying, "We can't thank you enough for having these camps. My kid, in the mornings, we have to pull them out to go get them out to school. On camp day, they jump out of bed and want to know how soon they can get to school." So those are really, I think, the big tells that parents look for mm-hmm. when they're wanting to know if the space is a good space or whether the experience is a good one. And it really has spread from their word of mouth.
You know, I have to ask this question, but for the Superhero Training Academy, do they get a cape? Do they make a cape at all? Do you know that?
I don't know that offhand. I can't imagine a superhero camp without a cape.
Yeah, it seems.
So I'm gonna predict yes.
So one last question. What is the enrollment of Southgate Schools?
We have about 3,500.
3,500. And what a tremendous service to the community. Dr. Sharon Irvine, Superintendent for Southgate Community Schools, appreciate your time today and sharing with us all of these great opportunities for students when school is not in session. Appreciate it and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
From helping the environment to helping students when school's not in session, I'd like to thank our guest today, former U.S. Congressman Andy Levin, and Superintendent of Southgate Community Schools, Dr. Sharon Irvine. That's all the time we have for today, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.